Sai Ram, and a warm welcome to yet another episode of Radio Sai Answering Booth. This is Prem, your friend from Team Radio Sai. This is a show that me and you listeners do together, don't we? In fact, it is you, me and Swami. And even as I say that, I recall a sweet interaction that happened between Swami and a couple of students. Well, this was after the students had graduated and they were waiting for Swami to instruct them as to what to do next in their career. Well, most of these students would stay in rooms outside the ashram. Swami had instructed the boys once that it is better if they stayed as a group of few students instead of each one staying by themselves in a separate apartment. So these two students whom I'm talking about decided to stay in the same house. So one day Swami comes by and looks at one of them and says, "Hey boy, are you staying alone?" And the boy said, pointing to the other student, "No Swami, I'm staying with this brother." "How many of you stay in the same house?" Swami asked. "Just the two of us, Swami," the boy said. And then Swami responded, "Chi-chi, don't you know that Swami is always with you? You should say, three of us. Swami, me and the other brother." So the lesson was learnt, and the next day Swami comes by and asks the same question to this boy. And this time the boy gave a wide smile and said, "Swami, three of us. We both and Swami." "Wrong answer," Swami said. And then Swami explained, "I am with each one of you, isn't it?" So Swami pointed to each of the students and said, "You and Swami, and you and Swami. So doesn't it make four of us?" The boy shook their head and said, "Yes, Swami, that makes four of us." Well, it didn't end there, because the next day Swami came and asked, "So how many of you stay together?" And the boys were sure now Swami cannot multiply that number any further. So confidently one of them said, "Swami, four. Me and Swami, and this boy and Swami." Now Swami again said, "Wrong answer. Aren't we all just one? Then where is the question of multiplicity? The answer is just one." Well, that really is a sweet and charming interaction with Swami, but Swami has literally charted out the entire spiritual journey through that small and playful incident. We all start a journey as individuals, seeking to fulfill our own needs and desires. From there, we must graduate to living with each other in harmony. Start looking out for each other, like what Swami instructed, don't stay alone, stay with others. But even this is not complete. We must bring Swami into our homes and lives and make Him a member of our household and our life. Then we graduate to the point where Swami is not just a Godhead that is common to all, but He is my Swami. Each one of us have our own sweet relationship with Swami. He is our best friend, personal guide and counsel. And He is that for each one of us. But the special bond with Swami is never complete, and it fructifies only when we eventually understand that we all are one. Me, all those around, and Swami. There is not many, there is only one. So this is a show that three of us do together. You ask questions, I answer them, Swami's message forms the resource. But slowly, I must grow to the understanding that the one who is asking the question is asking it inspired by Swami, and so it is Swami's question. And you must feel the answer comes from Swami, and when we both realize that, our personalities dissolve into nothingness and only Swami remains. Praying that this beautiful journey attains completion in that ecstasy of oneness. Let us begin this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. I have a very interesting question today. When I say interesting, it's not something complex or esoteric really in that sense. It's a very common situation that many of us come across. Especially youngsters may be interested in today's question. But we'll get to that in time. Now I want to read out a quote for you from an American philosopher and author, Richard Rose. And this is what he says. I quote, "The highest form of spiritual work is the realization of the essence of man. You never learn the answer, you can only become the answer." I fumbled a bit in that, I'll repeat that quote again. "The highest form of spiritual work is the realization of the essence of man. You never learn the answer, you can only become the answer." End of quote. The first part of that quote is very similar to what Swami would often say, and something I made reference to last week as part of the answer. The ultimate spiritual quest is not to understand the world, the secrets of creation, or even the existence of God. It is to understand oneself. It is to understand ourselves. It is this question, who am I that needs to be answered, and it is this answer we must all seek. Swami would say, at least once in a while, wonder about this question and try to understand who you really are. And when I would think of this question, the first thought would be, but Swami, we know the answer. Swami has told that we are essentially divine, isn't it? We trust Swami, so we trust the answer too. But that is where the whole spiritual journey comes into being. It is not finding answers or collecting answers from others. As Richard Rose puts it, we have to become the answer or grow into the answer. This journey is beautifully described in the Bhrigu-vali. We did a two-part afternoon satsang on this very topic. If you're interested, you could go back and search in our website and listen to that. But the essence of the Bhrigu-vali is, sage Bhrigu asks his father, Varuna, to teach him the knowledge of the Brahman or the Self. But Varuna, the father, says, go and perform tapas and contemplate. The son first comes and says that food is God, annam is Brahman, he says. The father tells him, you're right, but you need to think more deeply. Again, he goes and contemplates and comes back and this time says, prana or the life force is Brahman. The father sends him away to contemplate further. And this happens multiple times, and Bhrigu moves from the understanding that manas or the mind is the self to vijnana or intellect is the self to finally ananda or bliss is the self and then goes beyond. In essence, Bhrigu goes through the panchakoshas or the five sheets of this human experience and eventually understands the true self. The beauty is, each of these answers and understandings were ones that he grew into gradually. Though what I'm saying is with regard to the understanding of the self, it is so with all answers too. Even answers that you will hear on this show. Answers can be got from anywhere, but the real answer is what we grow into, what we become. And that answer must come from the Swami within. All other answers are only good pointers and guideposts. It's been a rather long introduction, so let us head to the question of the week. But before we do that, permit me, dear listeners, to read that quote by American philosopher, poet and author Richard Rose one more time. The highest form of spiritual work is the realization of the essence of man. You never learn the answer, you can only become the answer. So let's head to the question that we have for this week. As I said, it's a very practical question. It's not a very philosophical one. It's been sent to us by a young listener, a young girl. I have Sister Sumana to read out the question for me. I'll play the question in her voice first, and then we'll see how we can go about answering this question.
Sai Ram, I have a friend working along with me. He has often tried proposing to me. I have tried my best to ignore it. Not that I don't like him. He's a good person, very straightforward and simple too. Somehow, I cannot see him as my life partner. What does Swami expect of me in this situation? I have absolutely no idea what should be my next step. I know my parents are looking for alliances for me, and I am kind of not for those coming through family proposals. Not that I wish to have a love marriage, but somehow waiting for some clue from within. I don't know if by choosing this friend of mine as a life partner, I would be doing wrong and regretting later. I am so much in confusion. Thank you, Sai Ram.
That's an interesting question, isn't it? Quite a practical problem that a lot of youngsters face. As I said, it's going to be something which the youngsters will be able to relate to. We've had a lot of philosophical questions on the show, especially of late, and this is quite, it's been quite a while since a practical scenario, which appears to be a mundane decision that has to be made, comes up on the show. And I say mundane not in the sense that it is an unimportant issue that we are dealing with. This is typically a decision or a choice that we come across where we tend to keep spirituality out of it, or the understanding or the spiritual approach out of it. We think that this is a mundane issue, or this is a very practical aspect of life where we don't have to bring in the idea of spirituality or God, right? So that's why I'm referring to this question as a mundane issue. But the effort through the answer is going to be to ensure to put across the idea that it's not a mundane issue as every other issue. When we talk of spirituality, it only means going to the spirit or the essence of the issue and making a more intuitive and informed or wise decision when even making such mundane day-to-day worldly issues we are dealing with. So one thing is, it's quite commendable that the listener is wondering what Swami would say, right? But there is a little difference between asking a question like this to Swami directly, saying that, you know, this is the proposal which has come and what am I supposed to do? Asking that question directly to Swami and asking that question to the answering Buddha, there is a little difference in that. Before I explain that, you know, a very, very small number of people, even when Swami was physically available and Swami was giving interviews and Swami was giving darshan, as students we all could approach Swami, a very small number of the people around Swami had the opportunity to ask such questions directly and personally to Swami. And when I say ask these questions, which means that to ask Swami to make those decisions for us. You know, when I have a choice to make and I go and ask Swami, Swami, these are the many options, what am I supposed to do? And Swami saying, yeah, do this, which means, in other words, it is asking Swami to make the choice for us, right? That's essentially what it is. And if Swami says, go ahead and do this, and we'll do that. Whatever it is Swami is asking us to do, we'll do that. The point I'm trying to make is, when we go to Swami and ask Swami to make the decision for us, we are literally outsourcing the process of decision making, of choice making, and we are asking Swami to make that choice for us. And the truth is, I think most of us, many of us people who are leading regular lives, tend to turn to, you know, Swamiji's and Guruji's for this very purpose. We want them to help us make these decisions, right? Because a decision that we make, the decision or the choice is made in a moment. But most often, its worth is not known when we are making the decision. Its worth is known over a period of time, or, you know, much later, when the choice cannot be undone most of the time. We've made a choice, we don't know how good the choice is, because it takes a long time before the worth of the choice is known, or we live out the choice that we've made, and later we realize whether it's a good choice or the right choice. Be it career choices and parents wanting to know if the person they've chosen for their son or daughter is the right one. People who wish to move from a country to another country. People who want to invest in a certain business. People who want to change their career. Any number of such choices, you know, we can, that list is so long. And many, many people have come to Swami and asked for these queries to be clarified. And the thing is, of the thousands and thousands of Swami's devotees, physically, very, very few have had the opportunity to get Swami to directly say that this is what you have to do, or this is what you have to do. And even if he does that, for a very, very few people he does it, and even those few people, it's only a few choices in their life that probably Swami gives them direct guidance saying that do this or don't do that. And in fact, you know, not only turning to Swami or turning to other gurus, you know, the reason why we turn to soothsayers and astrologers and palmists or tarot reading or whatever, any kind of predictive signs, we turn to because of this very reason, that when we make decisions, when we make choices, at that moment we really don't know what it's going to blossom into in the future. And so we can always do with a little bit of future gazing. If somebody can offer us in some form that, you know, be it our astrology or be it somebody who can say that, you know, if you do this, if you take this decision, you will suffer in the future, or this will benefit you a lot in the future. Something which will tip our choice in favor of one of the options which are available, right? I'm not saying it is wrong to come to Swami and ask these questions. I mean, I'm nobody to say that. You know, when I have a very important decision to make and I come and ask Swami, I think it means that I'm acknowledging that Swami knows better than me. And I'm ready to trust Swami and Swami's choice for me. And it's an important decision in my life. I am asking Swami, which means I trust that Swami will know what is better than I can understand in my life. So to a great extent, it shows a degree of surrender more than anything else. And, you know, what's good about turning to Swami and asking Swami to make such decisions for us, the goodness of it literally stops here. It's only an expression of surrender, and that's why it is good. And it's an expression of our trust in Swami, and whatever Swami says, we will do that. But the goodness of turning to Swami for making choices for us in life actually stops here. As I said, Swami did not give this access to every devotee who came, and even to those who had the opportunity, it was not for every decision that they had to make. So, though many times it's such needs and decisions and choices that bring us to Swami, I personally feel that Swami is here not to make decisions for us, but rather to prepare us to make such decisions, and more importantly, to help us live with the decisions that we've already made and find fulfillment in life, right? So I think this is what literally compels me to kind of conclude that, you know, these choices that we make, these decisions that we make, are probably not as important as we have come to believe. And the reason why we get stressed out when we have to make a decision like this, and I mean, this is of course a very important decision. I'm not belittling that. Choosing a life partner is not a small thing. But there are any number of such decisions that we get stressed out because we think that it is very, very important. It is life defining. Probably it is not. And I think that is one of the messages I get from the from looking at how Swami has dealt with this. You know, for instance, you know, you're asking this question, should I say yes to this person who's coming and proposing to me? Say you ask this question to Swami. Let's just imagine that you have physical access to Swami and you ask Swami this question directly. And let's say that Swami says yes. Well, that doesn't mean that because Swami has said yes, there is not going to be any problem in the relationship. There still will be problems and issues and roadblocks, because two people sharing a life, two families coming together, is definitely going to have a lot of issues, and you will have to work hard on solving these issues. As I've said many times when I've spoken about issues relating to family and relationships, you have to work hard, you have to invest love and patience to make any relationship work. Just because a relationship has been approved by Swami or blessed by Swami or Swami has said yes, go ahead, it doesn't mean that you're not going to have any of these problems, right? So when Swami blesses a marriage, it only gives us that hope and confidence that, you know, this has got Swami's approval. So it just gives us that much more confidence to put in that extra bit of love and patience, which I was saying, that investing that love and patience, you just do it with a lot more hope that Swami has approved this. So there must be some worth in working on this relationship, right? And if we look at it very, very objectively, even marriages blessed by Swami, performed by Swami, have also had, there have been plenty of cases where the marriages have broken or faced enormous roadblocks. I think the message to take is, from all of this, is I'm not trying to scare you, I'm not trying to discourage you from stepping into the next phase of your life. The message that is very, very clear from all of this is, problems are a part of life. So even if Swami himself makes the decision, it does not mean that the choice will be perfect in our sense, in the way we look at it, right? Let me make that clear. So even if Swami is going to himself make the choice for us, as I said, we want to outsource this decision making because we don't have that foresight into future. So we want Swami to make the decision for us. So even if Swami himself were to make this decision, it does not mean that the choice will be perfect in the way we are imagining it to be, right? I think that is the understanding it leads to when you look at all of this. In fact, Swami would give this very beautiful and very profound example. He would say, consider the marriage that happened between Lord Rama and Sita. If there was anything like matches made in heaven, I think this is a typical one. Rama and Sita when Lord Vishnu and Mahalakshmi come from Vaikuntha. So literally, it's a match made in heaven, if you were to take it that way. So Swami says, you know, it's a marriage between Purusha and Prakriti, Lord Rama and Mother Sita, Lord Vishnu and Mother Lakshmi. And looking at it from the worldly sense, from the perspective of that avatarhood or the Ramayana story as it goes, Swami said that they had the blessings of two of the greatest sages of that time, Sage Vasishtha and Vishwamitra, right? And Janaka was himself a jnani, he was himself a person of supreme wisdom, right? And these are the people who come together, and Dasharatha is no less, he is also a very, very noble person. So Swami says that such people come together and they decide a date and time, and they decide that these two are a good couple to go. I mean, they're good to get married to, and this is the good time. This is the auspicious day. This is the good time to for them to get married. So imagine the amount of, how do I put it, the amount of blessings that a marriage could have. Sages like Vishwamitra and Vasishtha, and a jnani like Janaka is one of the parents. Then you have Dasharatha. All of these people decide the date and time for the wedding. So Swami would ask that such a marriage which was performed, was the marriage trouble-free? Did the marriage not have problems in it? You know, we all know the story of Ramayana. We don't have to go back into that. So Swami would refer to this. So Swami would say that, you know, you cannot discount problems from life. So, again, I'm not saying all this to scare you. You know, this should actually make that... The idea is to make you understand that the decision itself is far less overbearing than we come to imagine it to be. Not only the decision of choosing a partner, not only in this scenario, but any decision that we make. When we were students, what subject to specialize in would be something which was to bother us so much. And, you know, we used to get worried about it, or even, you know, when you're going from school to university, what course to take, or after you've finished one course, what to do now, should I take up a job or should I study further? You know, all of these decisions, they appear so ominous because we give them so much importance. But if you know, in the larger scheme of things, these decisions are not very, very important as we come to think of them to be. So when you acknowledge this, I think we can detach the choice to a very, very far, great extent from our future, right? And you can look at the decision far more practically. You won't get stressed out about the decision. So that is the whole reason why I'm saying all of this, right? And from Swami's point of view, you know, when you go and ask Swami to make a decision like this, you've got to be really prepared for what Swami is saying. And after Swami has made the decision for you, you will be facing a lot of problems, just like you'll face anyways, right? It's not that because Swami has made you facing problems, or because Swami has made you won't face problems. Problems are a part of life. But the moment you realize that the decision is made by you, or the decision is made by an astrologer, or the decision is made by somebody you can see far into the future, or the decision can be made by God himself, by Swami himself. In that sense, physically, if Swami were to tell us, still we will have to work on the problems we will face. We will have to work on the relationship. As I said, you will have to invest love and patience. Because how much ever we try, most of us will at some point look back and say, maybe I should have made this choice differently. You know, at such time, I think this decision should have something more than, you know, I like this person, or I like this thing, that's why I'm making this decision. There should be something more attached to that decision or that choice that we make. Can we make this decision that we're going to make? In your context, it is the decision of choosing a life partner. But any decision or choice that we make, can we make that decision itself, the choice itself, an expression of something larger, an expression of something which is more important than just my whims and fancies and my likes and dislikes, right? So if we can do that, at some point when we look back, I'm sure all of us will. All of us will look at important decisions, especially when we face roadblocks, and we'll wonder, maybe I should have done something else. Maybe I should have chosen a different field. Maybe I should have chosen a different person. At such times, we will look back, and this fact that this decision was not merely what I liked, but this decision had a greater value than just a mere choice. And that will give us a lot of solace, and it will give a lot of meaning to that decision itself. So what can we make this choice an expression of? The first thing that I can think of is, you can make this choice an expression of your duty, an expression of your swadharma, right? That is, you can leave this decision to your parents and you can choose to obey them, right? And when I say this, it's just like how I said, when you go to Swami and say, Swami, you make this decision for you, I'll follow it. And at that point, that choice becomes an expression of our surrender. And we obeying what Swami tells us becomes an expression of our surrender. Similarly, when we leave that choice to our parents, we say that, you know, you choose, I mean, this is my life and you have every right over it. You tell me whom I should get married to and I will follow that. You are making this simple choice an expression of your duty towards your parents or your swadharma. I know that in the question itself you mentioned that, you know, your parents are looking out and you're not very keen on such proposals. I'm saying this in spite of that, right? Many months ago I had dealt with a question on how to help. It was a question from one of the parents who said, how do we help our sons and daughters make wise decisions when it comes to choosing a life partner? And I think in that I'd extensively spoken about the virtues of an arranged marriage system, virtues of parents choosing the bride or a bridegroom for their children. One of it is, you know, you're acknowledging that you're not merely choosing a life partner, but you're choosing a person who's going to now become a part of not only your lives, but a part of their lives too, right? And that is what essentially a marriage was traditionally, not only in Indian culture, but in all cultures, that it was a coming together of two families, and the value that such a model brings is immense. I'm going to repeat all of that. If you're interested, I'll direct you to that answer which I had given. You can listen to that. But one of the points I'd made there was this, that it is an acknowledgement that you're choosing a life partner who's going to become a member of not only your life, part of your life, but part of the lives of all those people who are around you, your parents, your siblings, your extended family. So one of the ways you can do that is to make this decision a more collective decision. You need not necessarily completely relegate that decision-making or the choice-making to your parents, but at least you can try to make it a more collective decision, right? You can probably go and tell them that, you know, this is what has come by, what is your advice, you tell me what to do. But I'll come to what you can practically do in a bit. But the second point I made when I was talking about the arranged marriage system is that it becomes a duty-centric model rather than a rights-centric model, where, you know, parents consider it as their duty to make this very, very important choice on behalf of the children, and the children make it their duty to obey their parents and follow the choice that they've made. And I've mentioned this many times in many answers, a spiritual approach to life is invariably a duty-centric approach rather than a rights-centric approach, right? So that's one of the reasons why an arranged marriage system is a good one. That's why I said this choice, when you involve your parents, it becomes an expression of your duty, your swadharma, your duty as a daughter. And finally, when I choose to do something in life, it becomes my choice, right? And it becomes the source of my happiness. And this is what I like. This is what I will be happy if I do. So when I make a choice in my life, it becomes a form of an expression of my happiness. But the moment I factor in others' likes and dislikes, opinions and decisions in a choice that I am making, the choice becomes more meaningful, right? It is just like the different types of happiness. I've spoken about this also earlier, that act which gives happiness only to you is probably the smallest form of happiness and the most insignificant act. But all those acts which give happiness and give value to a larger number of people become more and more meaningful. And the same way, the choice that we make, if it is only an expression of our likes and dislikes, that choice itself becomes far less significant. And the more we factor in the others' opinions and likes and dislikes, and the others' even fears and apprehensions, all of that into the choice, it becomes more complex. I don't deny that. That choice making becomes a more cumbersome process. But the choice itself becomes far more significant than me making the choice alone, right? And that's why when we look back after many years and you say that, you know, why did I make this choice? You'd at least feel that, yeah, we all decided together and, you know, we felt that this was the right thing. So at least that choice will appear a little more meaningful when you look back. And when I say this, I'm not saying that you will look back regretfully. At moments when that happens, we need to look forward positively and try to work harder. And some of these things will help in that case. When we look back at decisions we made, when we find that those decisions had more meaning than just it being an expression of our whims and fancies, it'll give us a little more meaningfulness and then it'll give us a little more positivity to look forward and work on that relationship. That's what I'm saying. So going back to this idea of relegating this choice making to your parents, there is a lot of virtue in allowing your parents to make this decision for you. I'm not saying that that is the only thing that you have to do. I'm not saying that, you know, don't make this decision, go and tell your parents. All I'm saying is there is a lot of virtue in doing it. If you choose to do that, there is a lot of virtue in doing that. So one of the things that you could do as a practical tip is you could go and tell this to your parents and say that, you know, this is what has happened. Somebody is showing interest like this, but I don't want to make this decision on my own. I think all of you are also equally, you all have a say on this. So I would like you to look at it and you tell me what I'm supposed to do, right? Not so much because you are not able to decide and you want them to decide, but with the true feeling that it's an important decision for all of you and you want all of them to factor in, right? So for that reason, there are many, many cultures, you know, modern cultures, modern families where this could be, if I make this suggestion to such families, I think it would be very, very absurd. There are many families in the West where children leave home by the age of 15 or 16, or the children move out when they go into university and thereafter they start living by themselves. It makes no sense to tell children from such backgrounds to go back to their parents and ask them to make this decision, or go back to their parents and tell them, you choose a life partner for me. It would be a very absurd suggestion to give there. But at least in cultures where it is still practiced, as you were saying, that your parents are looking out for you. So clearly you come from a culture where it is not so weird an idea. So there is a lot of virtue in doing this. It makes sense. And as I said, looking at it from the spiritual perspective, there is a lot of value in doing this. You are, for the many reasons that I said. So if you choose to do that, you know, there is a lot of virtue in it. There is a lot of value in making that choice. So if you consider that, it's not very outlandish. It is not very absurd. That is one option that you can think of. But even otherwise, if this choice is going to be yours, at least ensure that you have the approval of your parents and you have the consent of your parents. They wholeheartedly agree with the choice that you're making. That's one thing. Even if you're making the choice yourself, be sure that you have to convince them. You should take them along, and it is with their blessing that you make this choice of your life, right? So I'm not saying this is the only best thing, but there is a lot of virtue in letting your parents also involve in this decision. If not completely allowing them to make this decision, at least make this choice in conjunction with your parents. But I'm guessing that even if you're going to go and ask your parents, at some point, it'll come back to you. They will tell you, what do you like? What do you want? Right? So they might eventually ask you. So even otherwise, at some point, the choice will have to be made by you. Right? It comes back to you making the choice. Coming back to the idea that you have to make a choice, then, as I said, one of the options is to make this choice an expression of something larger. And one of that was to make it an expression of your duty towards your parents, your swadharma. The other way of looking at it is, if you can look at the choice as an expression of your thinking itself, your approach itself. Because the choices that we make, the kind of friends we choose to interact with, the kind of things that we want to do with life, the kind of decisions we make, all of this is an expression of our own personality, right? So the choices we make are in that sense an expression of what we desire for or what we seek from life. And what we desire and seek from life is who we really are, right? So I might be sitting in an ashram I might be in Prashanthi Nilayam, I might be in Radio Sai, but if all the time I'm thinking only about money and investment and promotions, that makes me an Artharthi, right? It doesn't make me a spiritual person. And or somebody like Janaka, he was a king, he was ruling a realm. But in spite of that, his mind was always immersed in Brahman, and that's why Swami says that Janaka was a jnani, right? So it is not where you are or what you are doing, but what you seek in life is what defines you. And that's why they say if you're seeking wealth, you become an Artharthi. If you're seeking knowledge, you become a Jignasu. And, you know, that is what defines you, right? So if you look at any decision, it is an expression of your approach to life, your thinking to life. So a decision like this, I think, is a good opportunity for you to analyze the decision that you are graduating towards, that you are pulled towards making, and you can analyze and you can see what are the things that you are seeking from life literally, because that is what you really are. And at the end of the day, spirituality is all about redefining ourselves and refining ourselves, right? So when you say in this particular context that he is a good person, but I don't think I'm keen on him, ask yourself, what are you really looking for? Is it something like he's not educated enough, or he's not earning enough, or not good looking enough? Or is it that he has some bad habits and you have your apprehensions about that? Or, you know, you are looking for very, very noble qualities in a life partner and you don't see that in him. He's an averagely good person, but you're looking for an extremely noble person. So what is it that is stopping you from saying that, fine, somebody has proposed to me and, you know, he's a good person, I'll go ahead. So ask yourself, analyze this reason why you are not very comfortable when you say that I'm not able to picture him as my life partner. What is it that you are looking for and you don't see in him, right? So if the decision that you make has to be based on spiritual understanding, that particular choice that you make should be of a certain kind. And that's what I think I'll speak about. So how should that choice be? Swami would say this, you know, we must always contemplate on what is eternal and what is transient. Swami would say, smara nitya anityatam. Nitya is what is eternal and anitya is that which is ephemeral. So Swami would say that constantly, this is one of the most important aspects of a spiritual life. You're constantly supposed to look at things that you are after, the desires that we entertain, and whether we are fulfilling those desires or not, this contemplation should always keep going on in our mind. I mean, am I seeking something which is, I'm trying to, let's say I'm going to buy a new mobile. That thought should be in the mind that, you know, this is only going to be for a few years. So I should not give so much importance to it. And this is a desire which is going to repeat itself after a new model comes. And that analysis of your desires and your seeking is what spirituality is all about. And Swami says that smara nitya anityatam. What you are seeking, is it superficial or is it something more deep? Is it long lasting? Is it ephemeral? That analysis is something that we need to constantly do. So I'm not saying don't consider things like external at all, but this is something that we always have to do, whether what we are looking for is something which is eternal or something which is ephemeral. So when you're trying to make this decision, this particular context that you are, base it on qualities that are more true, qualities that are more, that really matter. Like as Swami would say, you know, money comes and goes, but morality comes and grows, right? The very reason Swami says that is this, because money and the looks and all of those things are things which are there today, tomorrow they fade away, right? But there are some things, character, morality, culture, these are things that are more eternal qualities and they long last. So ask yourself, what are you seeking for? If you're saying that this person is not good enough, are any of these superficial reasons the ones that are stopping you, or are the qualities which are more eternal which is stopping you, right? And there's a very practical reason for this. You know, if you just analyze your own life, the way we have grown, the things that we wanted when we were 5-year-old is very, very different from the things that we wanted when we were a 10-year-old. And between the age of 5 to 15 or 17 or 18, the mind grows very, very drastically. The kind of things that we desire for changes so much. It may not change so much more after we are into our 30s, but still, at least the decades are different. What we aspire for in our 20s is quite different from what we aspire for in our 30s. And similarly, in the 40s and 50s, our mentality changes. So that is why when we make a decision in one of these decades, we're making a decision in our 20s, we have to ensure that that decision is based on those qualities which will be valuable even as we go through life. It should not be something which is only relevant for that particular age group, right? A lot of youngsters tend to like someone who is very, very fun-loving and very ebullient, literally, you know, a person who looks like a rock star or something like that. That's interesting for that particular age. But by the time they come into their 30s, you will need somebody who is monetarily productive. You know, that's a practical thing. You need somebody who will be able to go out and earn a living. And when you come to the age of the decade of the 40s or the midlife, you need someone who will take responsibilities in life, who will stand by you. And by the time you reach your 50s, you need somebody who can play the role of a mentor to the children. So the needs change as we grow. So when we make choices, those choices should be based on things which are more relevant over a longer period of time rather than something which is very fanciful for that particular age, and probably after some time, very soon we will grow out of that importance, and then we'll start thinking that, you know, why did I make this choice, and you know, it was a stupid thing for me to do. So that is why it's a practical thing why this is important, where we have to keep looking at our choices and say that, what am I basing this choice on? I mean, this is so true for everything. Even when we're making a career choice, just because a job is offering us more money, are we going to go for that? Or say that, no, there is more job satisfaction in this particular place, or I see a longer growth trajectory when I'm working in this particular field, so I'm going to stick to it. You sacrifice a little bit of increase in the pay based on the competition in the market, but you say that this is more important to me. I'm to be satisfied in doing what I'm doing, or this particular field is more interesting to me, I want to stick to this field. That is when you're making decisions based on things which are more important and more eternal in nature than in things which are more ephemeral. So ask that question, whether your choice is based on any of these things. And in fact, that is one of the reasons why the elders are more suited to make this decision for us, because they've, in the literal sense, they've seen more years than us. They are aware of this change. When I look back, I can see that what mattered to me when I was 15 does not matter to me now. So certainly when I'm at the age of 50 or 60, I will have far more wisdom, and I'll be able to see that, you know, the things which are important to me over the years are some of these things. That's why the elders are more suitable and are more mature to be able to understand what is the need, rather than a 20-year-old choosing a life partner for themselves. I'm not saying this always. Mistakes are made by even elderly people, but I'm saying that in a general sense, in a practical sense, this is what it is. That is why sometimes the elders are better suited to make these decisions for us. But be that as it may, we're not going to force that too much. So can you look for qualities that will be more relevant and more important on a longer run? Right, make the choice. I would say acknowledging that the needs of your body and the mind change over a period of time. This is a very, very important thing. You start by acknowledging that, and then you look at what are you seeking for. And as Swami would, you know, as beautifully explained, see, if the person is cultured, you know, that's why I said culture is a more deeper and a more long-lasting quality. And how do you look for a cultured person? Swami says a person who has more concern for others. As simple as that, somebody who is not completely self-centered, somebody by nature, he might not be someone who is constantly going out and helping others, but there is a balance, you know, he is concerned about his work, but there is always that, you see that that person is ready to help another person, you know, he may be ambitious, but there is a certain sense of morality, he is not going to push himself too much just to, you know, further his ambitious plans. I think these are all the things that really are more important. So ask yourself what your decisions are, you know, based on. I mean, even as I'm saying that, a word of caution, don't make it a pursuit of perfection in the choice making itself, because the other thing we all have to remember and understand is all of us are work in progress, right? None of us are perfect. And I always say this, there are no pre-cooked meals in the world, right? In life, there are no pre-cooked meals. There are only ingredients. And when we make choices, we only make choices of what are the good ingredients. We will have to cook our own meal. And that cooking has to be done with patience and perseverance, right? So don't look for perfection in the person that you are. Look for basic goodness, literally in that sense of, you know, what would Swami look for in each one of us? When Swami looks at us, none of us are perfect when we came to Swami, but we, you know, Swami literally has that hope that someday we will all grow up to fill his aspirations. I think even when we are looking at people, that's probably one thing you can look at. Does that person have the basic goodness? Does that person have that basic culturing or the basic selflessness that you can work on? So don't look for perfection in that person. Look for basic good qualities and keep all of these things in mind. And I think you should go back and review your decision, why you would like to say yes or why you would like to say no to this person, and analyze this. If you have decided to make the choice yourself, I think you can use this opportunity to review your choice making, because this is definitely going to come handy to you even in future. Even when you play the role of a parent, it's going to be very important. The choices that you will be making for your children should be based on things which are more eternal rather than those things which are more ephemeral and which are more fleeting in nature. Finally, I'll go back to the point of the insignificance of the choice itself, what I started off with. You know, especially when we come to this particular choice of a life partner, we give it so much importance because of one particular false understanding that we have and with which we approach this whole thing. The false understanding is that we think that we need to like something before we can love it, right? Or we need to like a person before we can love that person. I think this is a preconceived notion which is so false with which we start our decision making. This is not completely true. It does have validity. Of course, we need to like people. That's how we make friends. That's how, we probably choose a country to live in, or choose a city to live in, or choose a locality to live in, or, you know, choose a team to work in. All of this is made on choices based on, you know, we want to like the environment where we are working and all of that. But it is not so completely true. We need not be so obsessed with it. Because if we analyze our own life, most of the things that we really love so deeply are things that we have not chosen ourselves, right? Be it our parents, be it our siblings, be it our own country. You know, we are also proud of the country we are born in, whichever country we are born in, right? All of these are not choices that we have made. We have not liked these people and chosen them. We have not liked these attributes and chosen them, but we have come to love them. I mean, even our own appearance and looks and characters and talents, I think many of it are not choices that we've made, but they are things that we have come to understand. So when we acknowledge this, I think to a great extent, the stress which surrounds this choice, of any choice for that matter, will actually be removed. And I think you can go back to making a very, very practical decision, a very pragmatic decision. And as I said, you can use this moment to analyze your own nature, which is an ongoing process. This is one choice in your life. There are going to be choices which will keep coming again and again. Or if you reject this particular proposal, you're going to be faced with another choice very shortly, right? So this is something that we have to keep doing all the while. Constantly look at how we are making decisions, why we are choosing something over the other, what is propelling us, what is the desire which is propelling us. That desire is an indication of what we seek, and what we seek is an indication of who we are. So sitting here, what am I seeking? I mean, anything, if I'm doing a work, am I seeking the remuneration I'm going to get at the end of it? That defines me. Am I seeking the popularity that I'll get at the end of it? That defines me. Am I purely seeking the self-satisfaction that I'll get out of doing this work? That defines me. That is what I am. Or if I'm doing it saying that, you know, this, I'm doing it purely for Swami, I don't care if people acknowledge it, or I don't care if people are going to come and give me respect or give me love or revere me for it. I think that again defines me. So what we seek for at the end of the day is what defines us. And I think this is something which is a principle that you need to keep for life. And it will be handy for you for this spiritual journey for your entire life, right? So before I end, the last word about what you mentioned, that you're waiting for an indication from Swami. I think that's what you were referring to. You're saying that, you know, I'm not sure, I'm just waiting for a sort of an indication. There's nothing wrong in waiting for an indication from Swami, but, you know, for you to be able to receive an indication from Swami and to identify it and to follow it, you need to be absolutely neutral, right? Otherwise, even if you get an indication, there are a lot of chances that you might miss it, right? Or you might misread happenings around you as indications, or indications might come and you will overlook them because your mind is in a certain way. Like a beautiful quote that I read some time back, you have a decision to make. They say that, you know, you assign one of the choices to heads and one of the choices to tails and flip a coin. And the quote says that when you're flipping the coin, your mind will be thinking, I hope it's heads, I hope it's tails. You know, you will be hoping for one of the options to come. So they say that, you know, don't open the coin and see whether it's heads or tails. Just do what your mind was hoping that it would be. Because you've already made the decision. It's only going to become more complex if an indication comes which is otherwise, or if it comes and that you miss it. So it's nothing wrong in waiting for an indication, but if you are, you have to be absolutely neutral about it. You know, absolutely say that, you know, anyway it is fine. Because that is what going to Swami for a choice would be. Even today, there are many, many people who make very important decisions in their life by, throwing chits in front of Swami's picture and picking any one and saying that, okay, this is what Swami wants me to do, I'm going to do this. The reason they're able to do that is that enormous faith that they have that what comes is Swami's will, and the ability to work on any of the choices which come. That neutrality towards any option that Swami would give them is what actually gives them that faith to do an act like that. And that's what we would face every time we would go to Swami and ask these questions of, Swami, what subject to take? And I've mentioned this many times, even in other programs, where Swami would invariably ask, which subject did you get your least marks in? And Swami would say, go and do that subject. Or there are many cases where the students who did science till their 12th standard, and Swami would tell them, you go and do BCom. Or there would be somebody who was keen on doing research, but when they come and ask Swami, Swami would say, go and do an MBA. The reason why they were able to do that, or they were able to take that choice, was because of this neutrality towards whatever decision that comes. So that's very important, that if you are waiting for an indication from Swami, clear your mind of any one preference over the other. You're already thinking that I am not interested in proposals which are going to come from my family side or what my parents are looking. That is already a bias, right? When you already have a bias, then you are capable of misreading indications even if they come, or you're capable of reading indications where there are none. So be careful of that if you're looking for indications from Swami. So my suggestion overall would be, you know, to take a decision based on some of these things that I've said. You can go back to that. And some of these things which I've said can be the basis of how you go about making this decision. But at the end of it, you can still say that, Swami, this is what I've planned to do. This is what I want to do. But I leave the decision to you. If this is not something that you approve of, then I know that you have your own ways of stalling it. You have your own ways of ensuring that this does not happen. That is one way you have to do, because one of the questions that I had a long time ago was, you know, when do you act? When do you stop acting? And when do you surrender? Most of the time, I think that is a choice which is left with us. If you want to go to Swami and ask Swami, Swami, is this all right? Can I do this? Many people do all the groundwork and then go to Swami and say, Swami, should I do this or not? Tell me, what is your opinion? Because they feel that if it is not, likable to me, why should I go and ask Swami at all, right? But there are a lot of people who make that, who go to Swami for the decision making much before they do any of the groundwork, because they are ready to do anything which Swami says. So it's all a question of, where do you want to draw the line, and where do you want to say that, okay, this what Swami says, I will believe. So, and I think all of us, to a great extent, do make choices. Surrender, if it is perfect, I think none of us will be wondering about a decision at all. Surrender is going to make everything so smooth. So till we get to surrender, we have to make choices. We will have preferences. We will have likes and dislikes. We will make choices based on that. We will say that, you know, I like this more, so I'm going to choose this. And we will have dilemmas. So we can use that moment when we have the dilemma to understand ourselves better and refine ourselves. So to quickly summarize whatever I've said in probably a few sentences, one of the things that you can do is go and ask your parents to get involved in this decision making. Tell them that this is what is happening and you're ready to follow whatever they instruct you to do, because that becomes an expression of your duty, the choice. You're not relegating that choice making to them because you're not able to do. Don't do it that way, but involve them. Even otherwise, if you are going to make the choice, ensure that you have their approval for it. Never overlook that point. And finally, if you have to make the choice, ask yourself, what is stopping you from making this choice? Because your question itself suggests that, you know, something is stopping you. Ask yourself what is stopping you from making this choice and see if what is stopping you is related to something which is more ephemeral, or which is related to something which is more dear to you, something which is more noble in that sense, if I could put it that way, a noble quality or noble characteristic which you don't see in that person. If that is the case, at the end of the day, the decision has got to be a mix of compromise and a balance between the two, because there are no perfect people around in the world, right? There is no way you're going to get a person who is perfectly noble, even in that sense, even if you're looking for good qualities. So you just have to see if there is that basic goodness and you can work on it. So I know I've not made the decision for you, and definitely I'm not going to make the decision for you. That's not what this program is for. But I hope it has given you an idea of how do you go about making such decisions. First of all, we give far more importance to the decision. What is more important is what we do after the decision is made, after the choice is made. That is what is more important. And all our energy and all our wisdom is going to get sucked out of us in that process, right? That is what is important. But nevertheless, we do make choices. Choice making is also important. So I hope you will be able to use whatever I've said in coming to a conclusion. So thank you again for asking that question. If you have anything further to ask and get clarified, feel free to write to me. So with that, dear listeners, it's time to wrap up this week's Radio Sai Answering Booth. If you have a question, a practical question like this one, that would be wonderful. You can write to me at prem@radiosai.org. That's prem@radiosai.org. If you wish to be anonymous, like the listener today, please inform me. I'll ensure that I don't mention your name. If you can record the question in your own voice, that would be beautiful. I always like to play it in the voice of the person who is asking the question. I most humbly offer this effort at Swami's Lotus Feet. And before I go, a very, very happy Holi to all of you. It's the Festival of Colour. I believe it has started already and it's going to extend till tomorrow. So hearty greetings on the occasion of Holi. And why not leave you all with a song which is a celebration of this particular Festival of Colours. On the other side of the song, you'll be joined by Brother Bishu for the last segment of the day, the Vahini Satsang. But I'll be back again 7:30 p.m. next week for the next episode of Radio Sai Answering Book.
Yeah. भाइयों के संग होली के